you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 151 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, as usual. Playing a little hurt today, suffering from a cold that you might hear in my voice now and during the interview, so I apologize for that. Today, my guest is Carrie Jacobson. Carrie is a family law attorney with kind of a unique practice, you know, in the sense that she advocates on behalf of people who are looking to get divorced with a minimum of drama. And that's not an oxymoron. You can have a family law case without a lot of drama, without a lot of histrionics. And Carrie's practice caters to that niche of a clientele. So she's local here to the Washington, D.C. area, halfway between here and Baltimore. And it's a delightful conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So without any further delay, here's my friend Carrie Jacobson. Carrie Jacobson, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. It's nice to be here.
Well, I am excited that you are here for a couple of things. We haven't had a family law attorney on the show for some time, so that's kind of fun. And we haven't had one from the Columbia area, so that's kind of fun. So before I steal all the thunder, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and tell them a little bit about how you came to be where you are today?
Sure. So again, I'm Carrie Jacobson. I am the founder of Jacobson Family Law. I have been in my own practice now for 4 years. I have been practicing law for almost 10. I was with a prior attorney prior to starting my own practice, and I worked with him starting out as a law clerk while I went to University of Baltimore at night, and stayed on with him for several years later and exclusively did family law throughout that entire time.
So when you were at University of Baltimore, well, even before that, when you coming out of undergrad school, was it always in the back of your mind to go to law school?
Actually, yes. I have known that I wanted to go to law school since I was probably in at least middle school, if not before.
Get out. Really?
Yes. Yes, my mom actually started working as a legal secretary for a divorce attorney.
Oh, okay.
And I always thought that from then on, I knew I wanted to go to law school, but I never envisioned being a family law attorney. I thought that divorce would be the most boring thing possible. I have definitely been proven wrong.
Yeah.
I initially wanted to become a state's attorney so that I could become eventually a judge. So that's taken a little bit of a detour, but family law is by far not a boring field.
And doesn't rule you out from assuming a position on the bench at some point either, because we've certainly seen a lot of that, at least in the county that I work in, a fair number of family law attorneys elevated to the bench.
Yes, absolutely. So that is always a possibility.
So you go to work as a clerk and you're going to school at night, that's a hard slog to go through.
Yes. So I actually took about 5 years off between undergrad and going back to law school. And so by the time I went to law school, that first year was pretty intense as far as a lot of changes in my life at that point in time. I was recently relocating. I was engaged to my now husband and planning a wedding. We got married 2 weeks after my first year of law school. I got a new job. And so it was a crazy time, but I was fortunate enough to be able to do both school and work and had the flexibility within my job to do that.
So did you just wake up one day and say, you don't have enough stress in your life that you're going to have to work, go to school and get married?
It was a lot all at one time. Yeah.
Talk about it being an overachiever. So what motivated you then to go into solo practice? Had you, again, entering into the legal profession, was that something that was on your radar?
Absolutely not. I am not a risk taker. I am very much someone who have always expected to work for someone else and to take the safe road of bringing home a paycheck. But by the time I was about 6 years into practicing, for the most part, I was running a practice. And I knew that I could earn at least what I was making, if not more, mm-hmm. and being my own boss.
Yeah. You know, I think at some point in time here, now that we've got 150 or so episodes in the bank here of The Law Entrepreneur, I'm going to go through and tally up how many people actually are doing what they set out to do, you know, in terms of being an attorney or being a solo or the practice area, because it, by and large, is far and away the norm for people to say, no, I'm doing something completely that I had no intention or no idea that I would be doing. And so you've now said, I didn't anticipate doing family law, and I certainly didn't anticipate being a solo practitioner. And now you are both of those.
Yes.
It's interesting. What attracts you now? What keeps you motivated in the family law space? What do you like about it?
So I like to work with clients who are looking to divorce and to do so civilly. And I appreciate working with clients who are not out to get one another, that truly have their children's best interest at heart, and that they want to divorce in a civil and, you know, in a civil manner so that they can move on with their life.
You know, I'd like to think that there's a lot of those clients, but that's not the general feeling you get when you talk to people, and particularly the public, right, when you talk to them about what's involved in a family law practice, because they can only imagine, you know, people at each other's throats and, you know, it's a tooth and nail, you know, knock down, drag out fight, when it really doesn't have to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have found that I am getting more and more of the clients who do want to stay out of court, mainly because of the expense, yep, and the, yep, emotional toll that it takes on both them and their kids.
You know, and I do family law as well, not as much as I used to, but you find yourself oftentimes in that counselor role. I really don't like to be in it because, for one, you know, I live in a pretty transparent glass house. And so, right, I don't like to be giving anybody advice. But on the other hand, you can, from the perspective of being an attorney in this practice area, you can give them the advice that it can be done, as you say, without any drama or limited drama. And that it is a doable thing to get divorced amicably and move on and be an adult.
Absolutely.
You know, and I tell people, the longer you can keep the lines of communications open and continue to act like an adult, you're going to save yourself money. It's when you start and shut down those lines of communication and start behaving like a baby, or using the litigation as a playing field to determine who's the winner and who's the loser. That's right. That's when you are going to drive up the costs and drive everybody crazy.
Absolutely. And if it is something that actually goes to trial, it is very rare that there is a winner and loser. More, yeah, often, yeah, than not, everyone is losing.
Yeah. So are you now limiting your clients to those ideal choices that fit that model? Or are you just trying to get a greater percentage of those?
I am very much trying to limit the clients that I take. I am not accepting you know, the cases that come in and the clients are, you know, are out to get the other party. You know, I think there are some situations that ultimately the case will settle, and there's a high likelihood that it will, but sometimes they, it may start out in litigation.
Sure.
So I'm kind of taking them on a case-by-case basis, and I still have a few lingering cases from when I was doing litigation. But by and large, I'm not really taking new cases that are expected to be litigated.
You know, the dead giveaway is when they come in and then they ask, will you fight for my rights?
Right.
And I say, well, of course, I'm going to be a jealous advocate for my client. But if you mean, will I beat the other person over the head just because that's what you want me to do? No.
Right.
You know? And the other one that I get, and I understand this, I mean, it makes perfect sense from a marketing standpoint. You know, we're often taught to niche down to find a very narrow stream of potential clients that we might serve. And I've seen more and more people advocate or put, position themselves to be the champion of one side or the other. We are... Right. We are a mom's rights family law attorney, or we are a father's rights family law attorney. And that, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but that annoys me.
Right. So I take both parents, husbands, wives, you know, that is not so much my focus as it is people who want to try to resolve their matter amicably and civilly. And I do that either advocating for a client or also through my mediation practice.
Right. So let's talk about, let's get off my soapbox here about the good things and bad things about family law, because there are some really great things you can do, and it's very rewarding when you're really able to help people move on with their lives. But let's talk about your practice itself. What kinds of services do you offer? I know in our area, maybe not so much in other parts of the country, but or around the world, but in our area, collaborative law is very popular in the family law space, as is mediation. Do you do any of that or all of that? Or
all of that. So I am a certified collaborative divorce attorney. So I do collaborative divorce matters. I am also a certified mediator. I am court appointed through Howard County. I have had the child custody and access training, as well as the financial and property mediation training. And I am also a family law attorney so that I can represent individuals as well.
Great. Well, so then you've got all those bases covered. For Right. our audience that may not be familiar with it, can you explain what the collaborative process is?
Sure. So mainly it is a process where there is a team of individuals, of professionals that oftentimes, well, does include two divorce attorneys representing one for each of the spouses. We also oftentimes have either one or two divorce coaches who are typically mental health professionals. And we can have additional members of the team, including financial neutrals that work with the parties in developing budgets or dividing assets, and other allies to come in to work with the parties, such as realtors or mortgage brokers or the like. And the team will sign what's called a participation agreement that precludes the parties from using their respective attorneys in the event the collaborative process falls out and an agreement's not reached. They are precluded from using the same attorneys if they result to litigation.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders, all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. Spotlight Branding, helping lawyers become unforgettable. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. So there's a motivation there to get the job done without going to litigation, because the attorneys who are working on it have no vested interest in taking it to the litigative step.
Correct.
Yeah, it's an intriguing approach. In terms of cost, I'm just wondering, do you find this to be, in general, a cheaper approach than a full-on litigation, or about the same, slightly different, or is it case-dependent?
It is absolutely case-dependent, because each of those professionals may not be needed each situation. But as opposed to a full-blown litigated case, I think it would be most often less expensive than a case that would go to trial.
Yeah, I have not, dipped my toe into the collaborative process yet. I think, honestly believe it's not something you can really dip your toe in. You either are fully committed to that process and offer it as a service, or you're not. It's just kind of my perspective on it. But it does sound intriguing, and I actually spoke to a prospective client today and was trying to steer them to that approach, because it seemed like that would be a better fit than what I would have to offer.
Right.
So tell me a little bit then about your practice itself. Do you have dedicated office space? Or are you virtual? Are you a true solo? Share with us how you're set up.
Yes. So I am basically virtual. I have a shared office space, but primarily work from home. And at the current moment, I am a true solo, but looking for an admin to do more of the administrative side of my practice. Now, with not being in litigation, there's not as much need for an associate attorney or a true paralegal, but there is the need for more of the administrative side in handling client intake and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So are you doing no litigation these days or just as little as you can?
It's very little. The most that I'm doing at the moment is I'm also a court-appointed best interest attorney.
Sure, yeah.
So some of those cases from time to time go to litigation.
Yeah, so in that kind of scenario, you can indeed have a very lean kind of staffing profile. You can pretty much run the shop by yourself. And then as a case might require, you can add additional resources on a ad hoc or an interim basis.
Correct.
Great. And I'm gathering that you have relationships, as you said, with financial planners and with mental health and family services advocates to round out that collaborative team.
Absolutely. So I'm part of the Howard County Collaborative Professionals Group. And so within that group, there are financial neutrals as well as mental health professionals. We have a realtor and a mortgage broker and several other, you know, professionals. So typically we work within that group. I'm also on the board of the Collaborative Project of Maryland and have connections with group, you know, individuals through that group as well.
Sure. Now, given that scenario, I see where you really positioned yourself to take advantage of the world of technology, because it's really hard to do what you do without having, you know, at least a solid technology base. So tell us a little bit about what are some of the tools you use and how do you use them to get the job done?
Sure. So I have a case management system. I personally use Rock and Matter. I have a laptop. I use my iMac in my home office. I use Dropbox for all of my client files. I set up to where all of my clients will make their appointments for consultations or calls through Acuity, so that reduces some of my, you know, back and forth with trying to get clients to set up calls. And the one thing I really like about the Acuity program is that it accepts payment online.
Okay.
So when clients make an initial consultation, they can actually pay for it right then and there. And, you know, so everything, really, most of my contact with clients after the initial consult, and sometimes even the initial consult, is by phone and email.
So how did you come to choose Rocket Matter?
In part by listening to your show.
No way.
So, yes, I did not have a case management system when I initially started. And, you know, that's probably one of those things that I should have, you know, bit the bullet and done from the outset. But it was just me and I was able to keep everything, you know, going without the need for that. So about a year or two into my practice, I decided to use that platform.
Well, we had Larry Port on the podcast way back when. Right. I mean, he was Larry Port is the CEO of Rocket Matter, and you know, Rocket Matter was one of the very first practice management tools that I looked at because it was one of the very first that ran on an Apple system. So he was way back on episode 14, if ever anybody wants to go back through the archives and look at that. And how about billing? Are you doing your billing through Rocket Matter?
I do. And it's a very simple system. So I'm able to do all of my billing through Rocket Matter. And they've recently come out with, within the last year, their Rocket Matter payments. So when the invoice is sent to the clients, if there's a balance due, they can simply click on the tab within the email to make their payment.
Okay. So pretty much it reduces it to a paperless transaction.
Absolutely.
And do you use any outside services for bookkeeping or for marketing support or anything else?
So I do have a CPA that handles all of my bookkeeping and reconciliations.
Good.
And I do a little bit by way of some social media marketing.
So you have a really detailed blog page on your website. Do you author all the content there?
So far, yes.
Wow. You're busy because there's some good stuff there. I mean, I read through it in preparation for the interview. Is that something you're thinking at some point along the line of getting some help with?
Absolutely. It's difficult for me to keep up with the consistency that I need to be in doing the blog posts. So it would be nice to outsource some of that.
Yeah, that's the biggest complaint I think people have in terms of content marketing, because the key to content marketing, as we've heard from several of our guests, like Megan Hargroder, who I think in the pre-interview discussion, you told me she did your website.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, when we had Megan on, I mean, she was telling us about how important it is to be consistent. And that's the hard thing for people to do. Most people, though, pick, you know, too ambitious a program. And I'm going to blog every week and post to my social media channels three times a day. Well, that's very ambitious. And if you can do that and still do some legal work, you know, you're burning a lot of energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Megan was on episode 113, again, for those of you who are keeping track of these things. And Megan's a good friend of the program. And I may see her at the ABA Tech Show here in a week or so. So that'll be something to look forward to. Tell me a little bit then, how do you go about attracting potential clients to your practice?
For the most part, the majority of my clients come through either referrals of other attorneys, so other attorneys that I've worked with, and also I network a lot with therapists. So okay, marriage sure, counselors, sure. I find that a lot of the clients that come as referrals from therapists have put in a lot of the hard emotional work to get to the place with their where they are ready to move forward with the divorce. And they often are, you know, some of my most ideal clients because they're ready to set aside the emotional side of things and move forward with, through the business of the separation and divorce.
Interesting. How do you reach out to those professionals such as marriage counselors?
Well, it kind of depends. So some of them, again, are through the collaborative group. Others I have met, a few I've actually met from clients. You know, they may have been working with a particular therapist and one in particular, I kept getting these referrals from her and I was like, I don't know who this person is. So I finally took her to coffee. I was like, at least I would like to know who I'm working with. And so she's been a really great referral source.
Great. Great. So do you have ideas or plans to expand that marketing approach or is that satisfying your needs at the moment?
I've been doing some social media marketing, so direct contact and so social media ads. So trying to get the marketing out that way as well. But as of now, I don't have any plans for any additional paid advertising.
So if you're like most solo practitioners, you didn't know anything about running a business before you started.
Absolutely.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned along the way?
The biggest lesson is probably time management more than anything else.
Interesting.
Because it is definitely a challenge to handle both the business side as well as doing the legal side. And so learning to accept when I need assistance or hiring new staff or resources when things get busy.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a challenge, you know, for all solos. I used to like to refer to my practice being a three-man firm, me, myself, and I. And all three of us were working full-time. Right. And so it gets to be a real challenge. I just had a discussion online today with another practitioner in a forum about time blocking. They're a strong advocate of time blocking in order to make sure that you carve out spaces on your calendar in order to get the most important tasks of the day done. And I confided that I haven't had a lot of success with time blocking because it's a block on my calendar that I can move whenever I want or need to.
Right. I have also heard the advantages of doing it. And in theory, it would work wonderfully. But, you know, as you probably know, with the family law, there always seem to be last minute issues that arise that need to be dealt with. I don't have it as much in working with parties going through mediation and with not doing as much litigation, but there are still times where things arise at the last moment.
Yeah, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all approach to time management. I think it's a constant thing that we all struggle with.
Right.
Some people have elaborate to-do lists or task management systems. Some people use time blocking on their calendar. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges for solos is trying to find enough time in the day to get all the things done that have to be done, even if you're outsourcing as much of it as you can possibly do.
Right.
Well, listen, Carrie, this has been delightful. I'm glad you made the time to chat with us today. If anybody in our audience wants to reach out to you to ask more about the collaborative process or how to go about getting a divorce without any drama, what's the best way for them to reach you?
They can contact me at my website, which is Jacobson Family Law, or through email, which is Carrie, Cary, at Jacobson Family Law, or they can reach me by phone at 443-741-1147.
Well, that's terrific. So I want to thank you again for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur. And I look forward to keeping in touch and maybe getting out to Columbia and share a cup of coffee with you when the time arises.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Once again, I'd like to thank our sponsors for today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur, Ruby Receptionists. They, along with our old friends at Spotlight Branding, as well as Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, are the ones that make this podcast possible. And for them, I am very grateful. So please be sure to visit their websites. You can find the locations in the show notes for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. Or you can go to our website, thelawentrepreneur.com, and navigate to the resources page, and there you can find a way to get to each of their websites. So please visit their websites, sign on as clients. I'm a client now of all three, and I think you'll be happy you did so. So that's Ruby Receptionists, Spotlight Branding, and Market Circle, the makers of Daylight.